the Modus Operandi Podcast, featuring Alan Miller and Dr. David Overby. Produced at the IFPR Studios in Louisville, Kentucky. And now for the show!
Hello and welcome to yet another edition of the Modus Operandi Podcast. Today is, April the 23rd, 2010. This is episode 15. I am Alan Miller.
Good evening, Miss Case.
And that is James Noe.
That's Dr. Dave Overby.
He's not a medical doctor.
And unfortunately, it really is Alan Miller and not Jill St. John in 1970.
Who's...
No, actually, Alan is a great friend, but he doesn't look as good in a bikini as Jill St. John does in 1970. Never.
Okay. All right. Well, we're off and rolling. We're actually we're mixing the music in live today, and I just realized as soon as we started that Dave is actually only monitoring the microphone. So, sorry, Dave.
That's okay.
Should we go straight into the ogres or ogroids?
Well, I think that first we should talk a little bit about the debate we were having right before we set up, which was about food and the role of food in people's lives and on college campuses.
Well, this
and
is
like
Derby.
That.
Everyone has food. It's Derby week, by the way. Is Derby? Derby's next weekend, right?
It is.
Yeah. That would be the Kentucky Derby, for those of you that...
But this is when the partying gets serious, and it is the thing that was just my point about the culture, is that, you know, food should not be a marginal part of people's lives. And it's kind of a sad thing that it's gotten to be that way, because food does provide pleasure, and it's also social. I mean, it's really there to be shared and enjoyed with others. Well, now, the Derby time of year is a time of year where people sort of, in this part of the world, allow themselves to do that. You know, but most of the time, it is the Ogre Fest.
And I think you're talking about, you know, the culture of food. You think of France or Spain or actually most of Europe. Part of their culture is labor and labor's needs and wants. And one of those things is that you have a nice long lunch. You know, it's at least an hour, and most places it's two to 3 hours.
Yeah. And what the fuck is the matter? Like, why wouldn't you want that?
Well, I can understand it from the point of view of having worked like retail and in most businesses where you have to serve people all the time.
Right.
You need all of your people available all the time. And I'm not arguing that it's good. You asked why would you want to do that, and I'm answering that. I think that one of the big problems with and I think we'll get around to this. This will show up in our talk about the airline as well. Is the basis of our capitalist society is that rather than there be a buffer in all circumstances, and really, I mean, that's something that my parents and my grandparents just sort of thought was you just had. You always had a safety net. You always had, you know, a savings, you know, just in case something went wrong to fall back on. The way that businesses run these days is there is no fallback. You are penalized for having money in the bank. You are supposed to run your business on credit. You're supposed to run it as close to the edge as possible. And when you run a business as close to the edge as possible, the only way that the worker, the vast majority of people, get an hour-long lunch to enjoy their food, only have to work 8 hours a day so they can go home and enjoy supper, and only have to work one job, is if labor is a force to be reckoned with. And that's one of the reasons it's not true in America. And we were talking earlier about how I, for instance, have am trying to adjust my lifestyle so that I am able to work on my art and writing, etc., longer in the day, because I have to work at least 8 hours a day to just to make money. There is a huge, huge chunk of the American society that has to work 60 to 80 hours a week. That doesn't leave time hardly for sleeping.
For anything. And it betrays the folly of our system. I mean, if we had a really good system that honestly benefited everybody, if the rich getting richer really did benefit everybody.
Which it doesn't.
Of course not. The rich getting rich benefits the rich.
That's one of the big
Nearly all of us is not rich at all. I mean, not even close. In fact, there are people who used to be rich who aren't even rich anymore because of how rich the rich have gotten. But we've done this long enough. It's gone on for over a generation, basically going back to Reagan and then even Thatcher in 1978.
Reagan.
The late 20th century's push to... And we could have a debate about whether it's actually capitalism or not, or if it's a variety, but we can, I think, get to that another time. But I think that you're absolutely right in terms of the real strain and demand on people's time that they really have to be working, and that for me speaks to the drudgery of our society, which is obviously undesirable. But the other thing that you mentioned that I thought was good was the way that you have to run a company or a business. I think you use the phrase that you've got to push it to the edge. And it's mm-hmm. like, well, what kind of a culture does that? A culture that's afraid? No, a culture that's foolish. Like, why would you do it that way? Why would you just push it where if there is, you know, one thing kind of screws up, everything just completely collapses.
A volcano erupts in Iceland.
Right.
And airlines go belly up.
Right.
And
it costs $2,000 an hour to fly to Minneapolis.
An airplane is bombed out of the sky. TWA goes belly up. TWA, the Trans World America, Trans World Airlines, the which was supposed to be the airline for 2001: A Space Odyssey, which, by the way, we're in the year for the sequel of that, 2010: A Space Odyssey. We surpassed that, and we don't have people orbiting around Saturn.
I would say that's another example of what a failure we are.
We've talked about this a little bit before, but you know that Obama said that he wants to just skip going to the moon and go straight to Mars, and he wants to, in his lifetime, for us to orbit Mars with a human and for the person to come back.
Yeah, there's got to be that human experience of what it's like to go there.
So I'm kind of hip to
that.
And
that's a much better way to spend money on what really is military technology than just to be destructive. And I think if we could get back to focusing the sort of military-industrial component of our whole system toward things that are,
be nice when that happens.
Think about it. You know, if you want to actually go to the moon, people with a military background are probably good people, because that's going to be like really hard and require incredible skill. I mean, if you're going to be able to manage being in space, you know, you have to be one of these people who can fly these amazing planes that go super fast and do all of these different things.
I think that more than that.
Either that or maybe somebody like
more than that,
somebody like I could do it.
You're well, because you wouldn't mind if you didn't come back.
Well, I don't know.
Send me up there, land me, I'll just live as long as I can, and I won't have to deal with people.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think that's funny. And I think, given the day, maybe. But today's been a pretty good day for me, so no, I would want to come back, but yeah, I think that would just be a just to go into space. Maybe that is something I can really do in my lifetime. They'll have something, one of those deals where
you can do it right now if you're super wealthy.
Right, if you're super wealthy. So maybe in 20 years...
I think it's down to $200,000.
It won't be, you know, as expensive. Maybe by then it'll be like under $100,000, and I'll finally have really made it and done something. My amazing efforts will finally, yeah.
You know, you could, for not that much money, you can get relatively close.
You can go to Alaska and you can take a plane that goes over the North Pole. And for some odd reason, because the Earth isn't like a perfect total circle, when you're around the poles, I think the distance between outer space and land is shorter.
There's just something also about the solar winds. Yeah. And
are those like the Northern Lights?
Yeah, and the Earth is like, it's bigger around the center than it is from top to bottom. What were we talking about right before we got off on that? We were talking about food.
Food.
And
I think that on a college campus, there should be a real social educational experiment done where you would have the students primarily focus on feeding themselves and the campus. Like for an entire semester, that would be it. Like no time in the classroom, none of this, you know, boring outmoded bullshit. But you know, the campus would have a farm, and I'm talking like a real kitchen, like a big kitchen, like the kind that would be in a household where you had two or three generations living there, not just utilitarian.
What university are you thinking this
I'm not. I haven't thought far enough ahead about a specific one, but I'm guessing that there's probably one out there that it would work better for than others. It would be good for the first time that it would need to be small.
Somewhere in the Midwest is where it would have to be too, because you're talking about a lot of land to feed, say, 5,000 students. A lot of land.
Well, it wouldn't... Well, you might even want to have less than 5,000. But anyway, it wouldn't have to be that all of the food came exclusively from that farm. But the responsibility of the students would be to figure out, you know, how can you obtain and, you know, prepare the food. I mean, for pragmatic reasons, you could think about on what kind of a scale you wanted to do it. Like maybe you don't go from not doing it all to feeding the entire campus. But that what you would do is you would begin to recruit students and say, for an entire semester, you know, and you'll get, you know, 15 hours worth of credit for doing this. But, you know, it's just going to be an experiment. We're going to see if, you know, you can just do this. Like you're going to prepare food for however many different people,
you know,
per day.
Berea would be a good place to try that. So I think that what you would need would be someone to have given an endowment to make an actual cooking school that was part of the school, and then have that be integrated into the entire rest of the student body.
Yeah, that would only take 20 years. I'm talking about you simply raise the money and you just find the interested party. Because if you could find people who are interested in it, then you could do it.
Oops, sorry, I just cut you off from the microphone there.
It's okay.
I'm trying to silence the dog's bell. Hi, Banjo. You were arguing something and you talked so long that I had a point to add to it, and I've forgotten what it was now. Okay, well, I think it's about time for
Ogre Fest. Ogre Fest. It's time to hang out with the ogres. Ogre, bum, oi, oi, ogre, ogre. Oid, 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 oid.
You have no sense of rhythm whatsoever.
I'm using a Sharpie here.
Okay, let's start with yours because you've got a whole long list of them.
I have a sense of rhythm. Perhaps I just can't mimic it in a somatic manner.
Anyway, ogre, it's...
Ogre Fest! Ogre Fest! It's time to hang out with the ogres!
That's better.
That was good. Yeah. So,
all right, so...
Yes, that's right, listener. You get two Ogroid intros for the price of one.
No, Ellen! You get three!
Ogre Fest! Ogre Fest! It's time to hang out with the ogres!
Oh,
let me do one of mine real fast, and then it can segue to yours, to the one that you posted on the blog. Mine is Abacus. It's the investment
blog pride. Post.
It's the blog post. The Ogre Fest.
I got a blog post.
Abacus is the investment package that was rigged to fail, put together by Goldman Sachs.
Okay, so this is the
one of the recipients.
This is
of the
financial thing that they set
fortune.
Up that they bet against.
Yes, the whole point was to set up, and it had to do right
it
when
was
they
subprime
knew,
mortgages.
Right when they knew the housing market was just gonna blow up, and so they designed this investment. And the thing is that they sold it to people, and they didn't ask for investors in the financial package. What they did was they recruited people to bet on it.
Yeah, it was short selling. Is the
to bet that it would fail, yeah. And it failed, and they made a fortune, and then everybody lost their homes.
And this if this was a casino, every single person that knew what was going on
would be shot.
They would be in a penitentiary for a long time. And this is the problem with this is that a few sacrificial lambs.
There might be a
are gonna go
separate
down.
But equal argument that you just made there.
Really?
Sure.
Huh. This is true.
Right. Because you can say that it's a form of gambling.
That's the problem with Wall Street. It is no longer investing. It's gambling. And that's what these people have made fortunes off of. And they're going to get to keep them.
And they're not only going to get to keep them, but because this has happened, they're now operating with an easier set of rules because the precedent has been established that they cannot fail. So they get lower interest rates. They get opportunities to do things that other businesses can't do. And they have the cushion, the net that you were talking about earlier, that none of the rest of us have.
Yep.
And no one else in the business world has.
And when their business fails, they're not held responsible in any way. And this is one of the problems with the way that these things are set up is that people get paid on the front end, and it has nothing to do with the result on the back end. So these people were double dipping. Not only were they gambling with other people. Here's how this thing works, listener. There were a lot of home mortgages being made, and it was beginning to dawn on a few people that there were these too many of these subprime so-called mortgages, which were basically mortgages given at usually adjustable rates to people that didn't have real good income in the hopes that their property would become worth more and B, that their income would go up. And that's the way it's supposed to work, but it was insane. I mean, they were giving loans to people that... So these bad loans were starting to build up. And what the Goldman Sachs people did was they started buying those bad loans to put into this financial instrument. I'm making quote signs with my fingers. And
well, they were also
and
doing
what
credit
they did,
default swaps that would siphon the bad loans off to
they
third
then
parties.
Bought insurance against these subprime mortgages from AIG. And when they went bad, AIG paid them. And here's the thing, is that they got paid on the front end when they bought the mortgage. All the people that were buying the mortgages got paid for having bought these horrible, horrible mortgages. And then they were being rated, they were all bundled together into a bundle, and they were being rated as a good investment. So people were giving them more money to buy more of these shit loans. And the entire time, the Goldman Sachs people were betting that it would go bad by buying this insurance. Well, when AIG was about to go under, they were propped up by our government. Now, here's a little thing about AIG you may not be aware of.
They also
insure the mercenary forces that our government is paying in Iraq and Afghanistan and in other nations. So when a mercenary is killed, or as they call them, contractors, but let's be realistic about this, mercenaries, hired killers, when one of them dies, it's not reported as a death, like a soldier's death. But we pay for it because AIG pays out the insurance money and we reimburse AIG. They make a profit on the death of every mercenary overseas. So the levels of just repulsive, just the behavior, it's unhuman. You know, it's reptilian. So we may actually be able to lead into some conspiracy theory talk with that one. Do you have your tinfoil hats, listener?
Yeah, and that's where the kitsch, the rhetoric of mainstream America that no matter what, we don't do anything wrong. People make mistakes. Sure, it's not perfect, but in the end, it's all going to work out. Keep working hard. I mean, this stuff is, you're right, it's unhuman. It's not just a matter, it's not just gambling. Like, it's not investment banking, it's gambling. It's not just gambling, it's sabotage. It's purely predatory impulse to completely fuck over and obliterate anyone, everyone, everything, but that's not you. Who is not you? And your immediate group who are basically just like you.
It's a double and triple dipping. You know, you're getting paid gumming and going, and you think about it. You've got the people there's people that go, okay, I see a weakness in the system, so I'm going to bet that something's going to go wrong in the system because of that weakness. That's one thing. I don't really have that big of a problem with that. But when someone sets something up, it's so fucked up to begin with,
right,
that it is definitely going to fail.
Right.
And it's something just, that's in the billions of dollars.
Right. And they knew this, that it wasn't a matter of something failing like the Titanic that was just fuck up.
It's like taking out insurance on somebody and killing them.
Right.
I mean, that's exactly what it is. It's just classic sort of mobster.
It is. It is. Yeah. And when it's sabotage, and the stakes are as high as they are, and you're talking about a national economy, then it's not just sabotage. It's
world
also,
economy.
It's also treason.
Yes,
right.
Which they, none of and them, it's the world. None of them will be charged
it's
with.
It's the world. Well, there'll probably be some fall guys.
Look,
which
Dick,
is to Dick go back
Cheney,
to,
Dick
go
Cheney
back to
is
mob.
Guilty of treason, and he will never be charged.
Of course
for
not.
It.
Right.
You know, Halliburton was hiring the contractors that AIG was insuring. There's in this entire circle fuck where they're just like each one of them is in each other's anus, you know, great big circle.
And the other thing that is
and they like it
is very
not that I've got a problem with that. People can get in the circle butt fucking. I don't care. That's fine. But when it's when I'm forced into the circle,
yeah. That's the problem.
I don't like it. My butt doesn't. It's just not my thing.
I mean, yeah.
Sorry. We should call Dan Savage in and get him to help us out with this.
Well, what makes Goldman Sachs and AIG totally different from the world that the rest of us earthlings live in is that they are institutions that have become hybridized by the government. Which means they have the power, they have the physical force, like the military, right? You can't have Halliburton and you can't have AIG insuring Halliburton. And that whole deal can't, happen until you have first a massive military in place. You know, and the military is the branch of the government. And the thing is that as long as the president stays intact, that they are, as the cliche goes, too big to fail, then they won't fail. And if they're not going to fail, I mean, basic sense tells you that they're being conditioned not to be concerned about doing things that would lead to failure, because they're not the ones that's going to be failed. If they could not... If it were not going to be the case that they weren't going to be not allowed to fail, that is, that they could fail, they wouldn't do these things. They wouldn't wreck their own economy, knowing that that would, they would fuck everybody else over too. I mean, it's like you're on board the Hindenburg, and what they did is they had AIG there as their escape hatch, and so they lit the fucking blimp on fire and let it crash. But then they scoot away, eating caviar and drinking Dom Perignon. Right, but if they didn't have that, and of course that escape hatch is the bailout. It's what literally gets them out. OUT. People in fucking Camden, New Jersey, are living in tents. People are losing their jobs. There's going to be over 50,000 teachers who are going to be without a job next year.
Here's the thing: AIG, even if they had failed. The people that were truly responsible for the just fucked upness of all of this, every single one of those people would be wealthy, free, and would be able to go on to fuck over more people, whereas the workers at AIG, and that's the thing, is even a company like AIG or Goldman Sachs, there's a whole lot of people that are just workers that are just doing the shit you got to do to make things work. Yeah, but all those people would be fucked. But the people that drove the goddamn boat into the iceberg,
right?
Knowing that it was going that way,
right?
Even if the boat was allowed to sink, which is what we did not do, we came and buoyed it up. Those people would be just fine. They could live a life of absolute leisure forever.
Because they already had so much money in the first place.
But they took the money,
sure,
from all of this craziness,
right,
ahead of time. They took their cut at the beginning, and what do you know? There's nothing left at the end. But they've got theirs, as it were.
Well, sure.
And that's a big problem, and it's not. I've heard, this financial reform bill, which I think we got to do something.
It's a major
scandal. Does not say anything about how these people are paid.
Right. It's another one of these. It's sort of like Obama's so-called health care reform. It's one of these things that has been watered down and picked apart so much that it doesn't have any clear fundamentals that demonstrate that it's really going to be...
It's a giveaway to private industry.
That it's really going to do anything. Which, I mean, and that's the point. The point is not to have these symbolic acts. One thing I get increasingly frustrated with the Obama administration and even Obama supporters is they forget that the campaign season is over and that the symbolic is completely meaningless. I mean, once you're governing, all that matters is substance and action.
Ah, Dave.
I don't care. I know
the
that
campaign season, right, is never over.
Exactly. That's
not
my,
in
that's,
America.
That's my whole point. But I think the problem with that is not just the scheduling and the way the system works, but it's the fact that the politicians exploit that. It's always a freaking campaign season. There's either you're just coming out of one or you're getting ready to gear up for yet another one,
ever gets done.
Yeah, and well, and
or if it does, it's
people talk
down.
People talk about how Obama's a good politician, and I think that his handling of the bank scandal and the bailout and the stimulus package is really exposing him on this. As always, he's trying to walk both sides of the fence when he talks about reform on Wall Street. He's trying to sound like somebody who in some ways is sympathetic to the big bankers and understands they play this extremely vital role in the way that our society works. And at the same time, he's trying to tap into populist anger about it and appear to care about the people who are not rich and are have nothing to do with the Wall Street world. And this doesn't make any sense because this is someone who is operating with no awareness of his audience. Who is it that you're really trying to appeal to here? And of course, it's like the people on Wall Street are hardcore Republicans, and they're going to hate his fucking guts no matter what. They want a Republican to get in so that they don't even have to deal with getting a meaningless reform bill.
And they're still playing the Southern strategy.
And having to fight it. What's that?
They're still playing the Southern strategy. That's, empowering the rich white man. I mean, that's what they do.
Right.
And I think we've talked about this a little bit in the past, but it's still pretty much rich white men. You know, there may be a Tiger Woods thrown in here and there, but by and large, it's the Republican. Well, and I think that we slovenly talked about it during the last podcast that the Tea Party, it turns out, is mostly fairly wealthy.
Mm-hmm. And isn't quote, that interesting?
Air quotes, well-educated, which means they were educated to do college-level jobs. It doesn't mean they're actually intelligent.
They're credentialed.
Yeah.
They're not educated. They were never challenged to be educated. They went to college like all Americans do just to get a job.
And when I stopped at that Tea Party organization, which, by the way, the picture that's on the Mopod blog to go with Dave's tax post is... I shot that picture, and everyone was wearing really nicely pressed new pants and brand new shirts.
If you think about it, these are people who, I mean, you're talking about how much people have to...
Matching belts.
You're talking about how much people have to work. You know, these people apparently have time to just go to these city halls or public spaces and where the courthouse is and just... basically act like morons all day.
Spend all day on a weekday.
It's interesting. What does that tell you? Right, all day on a weekday. I mean, and the good observation about this that has been made is that of all of the bad things that are happening and all the people out there who really do have a completely legitimate reason to be griping and being pissed off, these, the most vocal and angry people, are not the ones who really have any reason at all. And to me, that supports the idea that the dominant... mainstream value system by which Americans live offers no fulfillment at all. This idea of a life revolving around getting a job and having a certain income, because that's exactly what these people have. But in the end, it's just somehow hollow for them, right?
In the end, we have no blueberries.
Right.
So we need to take a break.
We do.
I noticed that our glasses
are empty glasses, and
you know, this would not be. The Modus Operandi podcast.
If it were not a beer break.
Right. So we're going to let the robot do his thing.
See, that's an empty glass right there.
That's an empty glass. It sure is. Here.
Just talking about I get no rhythm, man. Shit.
Talk to us, robot.
This Modus Operandi podcast.
Contact information. And other information. Please go to psychicreform.com/Mopod.
So, Dave, why don't you tell our listeners your next Ogroid, which is the white flight that is going on in Amsterdam.
Dutch white
it's
flight.
It's interesting because
it's Almere. And Alan, would you please put your savvy internet skills to work and type in, you know, Almere, Almere. Netherlands.
And it came up as the number one suggestion from Google. So they built this.
As I understand,
tell the listener.
As I understand, what they've done recently in the Netherlands is they just built a new city, and it's called Almere, bordering Leestand and Zeewolde, comprises the districts anyway. It became a municipality in 1984. In October of 2007, the City Council of Almere made agreements with the government to expand the city to it's doubled in number.
We're looking at Wikipedia.
Yes, but the point is that this is a place that has doubled in what, 2 years, and guess what? There are no immigrants there. So this is the apparently ever-growing xenophobia that I think sadly is an overreaction and a misguided reaction to. And I know there are real immigration problems in the Netherlands and the rest of Europe. So I'm not
so
trying to sound.
Is the province of Flevoland, which is great, Flevoland. We live in Flevoland. Is that where is that the province that Amsterdam's in?
No, I'm pretty sure that Amsterdam is in Noord-Holland. So I mean, you could type in Amsterdam, and we could get the same information. The relevance of this has to do with the fact that not too long ago, the Christian Democrat coalition government, center-right government, collapsed. Labor pulled out because the Christian Democrats wanted to extend the military stay, the Dutch military stay in Afghanistan,
but it's past right
here. The August. They're not.
They're
too
right
far
across apart. This body of water, whatever right. that is.
Right. Imagine that. Right. And of course, the Netherlands itself is a really small country. But anyway, there are going to be national elections in June of this year to elect a new government. And one of the interesting possibilities about the center-right government collapsing, even though it's over staying in Afghanistan, is that now the far-right seems to be poised to now take over the Dutch government. And Geert Wilders, forgive me, I'm probably saying that wrong, doing my best, but he is a big anti-immigrant candidate who is depicted as being far-right. I don't know enough about him or the general way he fits into the context of Dutch politics. He has also been described as libertarian. So libertarian and far-right are not the same. But as I understand it, he is very much anti-immigrant and apparently is appealing to a very widespreading anti-immigrant sentiment in the Netherlands. So this Almere place doesn't have any immigrants, and it's like suburbia Dutch style. It's like, let's all get out of Amsterdam, let's all get out of the Hague, where it is pretty multicultural. I would actually say that the Hague has a greater presence of non-native Dutch citizens living there. Let's see. Here's a piece from March. Today, Almere and The Hague. Tomorrow, the entire Netherlands. Losses of labor were limited thanks to the support of immigrant voters, although those voters were less obvious than 4 years ago. Now, that's encouraging. Let's see. Turnout among new Dutch was comparable in Amsterdam to the number 4 years ago. 46 among Turks, 26 in Surinese. I think we're getting a lot of information here about the way that the different immigrant populations voted, but the bottom line is that there is the possibility that in June, there he is in that third paragraph down there. Let's see, Geert Wilders' party, which participated only in Almere and The Hague, finished exceptionally well. In Almere, the PVV is the biggest party. That's the People's Party for Freedom, but it's the far right wing, mm-hmm. right? And so they have two People's Parties for Freedom. The PVDA down there is the liberal one, and that's the one that basically got is becoming extinct, I think, after that. So as I understand it, regardless of which party gains control of the government, it has to form a coalition in order to get anything done. However, that said, the fact that a place that was occupied by the Nazis is seriously considering having a far-right guy in there. Let's see. Muslims in Almere shouldn't fear the PVV, says party leader Geert Wilders on Wednesday. If they abide by the laws, they're equal to everybody else and have no reason to be afraid.
If they abide by the laws.
Wait, what
and
the
hell? That's just like the right-wing thing.
Right.
If you have done nothing wrong, you have nothing to worry about.
Sure. Right.
You know, it's like they want to come in and search your home. Well, if you've done nothing wrong, you have nothing to worry about.
Why would you care?
Right. Why would you be bothered if when you're just sort of, for no particular reason, pulled over and your vehicle is searched? If you haven't done anything wrong, you shouldn't have anything to worry about. There's no reason you should go suing them for violating your basic human rights
sure.
to privacy and not to be searched for no fucking
and
reason.
And just a decent human treatment. I mean, people don't want to live their whole conscious lives being intimidated and harassed by authority figures.
Well, and that's just the thing, though. There's a lot of people that don't believe it will happen to them.
Sure, that's why fascism is always popular. And I was saying about that earlier. And that's the problem, and the Dutch better watch out for this, is that today the net is fairly small. It's the immigrants, and a lot of people can look around and nod their heads and say, yeah. But then guess what happens? Then it's the intellectuals and the artists, and then it's the liberals, and then it's the
opposition, it's the protesters,
it's anybody who starts to say no, it shouldn't be like this, and then they're going after this group, and they're going after that group, and they're going after women, they're going after, because after all, I mean, if you're not going to be open to a society with immigrants, then why are you necessarily going to be open to a society where women have equal rights as men?
By the way, listener, we were referring to islamineurope.blogspot.com, and that Islam in Europe is one word.
It may be one of these things where Amsterdam is going to be just the liberal headquarters, and the rest of the country is going to go far right, or it may just be that the whole country is going to go right, and that the place is just too small, that Amsterdam is just going to kind of cave in some ways.
And as long as we're talking about the far right, we should talk about the far right in America too, because I believe that Arizona just recently passed their anti-immigrant law. I think the governor signed it today. I think I just heard that on NPR while I was taking a shower. I would just like to. This was on the our blog, or was it on? No, I'll at least link over to it. I think it's on my blog. Which is called Me Talk Big Noise. Everyone's familiar with Michelle Bachmann, I would hope by now, who she is just really is tinfoil hat fucking crazy. I mean, she's batshit crazy is just the only term I can use for her. She is just out of her goddamn mind. And how it is that she keeps getting elected boggles. I mean, and you've got to wonder,
the majority of people in that part of the world,
of human that is different from you and I? Well, I guess, I mean, there must be you and me, not you and I.
It's a cognitive thing and it's a cultural thing. I mean, it's just. That's a big part of an ongoing debate that we have, is that I think that these batshit crazy tinfoil head people are just exceptionally good or functionally good at articulating what lots of other people already think and already thought. And so then when they hear it, they're like, yeah, I'm not as good with words as the talk radio people or this, shit ass in Arizona, but because there's just no way you should be able to listen to this stuff and for 10 seconds and not just be able to tell that it's bullshit. It's like, how long do you have to be in a bathroom before you realize that, someone's just taking a shit in there? By the way, I figured out the name for my guy.
It's good for everything.
Lewis common denominator?
Larry.
Larry common denominator.
It's the L, I think, LCD. Is what did it. Because he can't, LCD sounds either like a psychotropic drug or a behavioral disorder.
Or liquid crystal digital.
Or some shit like that.
Or liquid crystal display.
And he's...
I think that's what this is.
He's too useless to even have initials. So he's just going to be fucking Larry. And I've thought about it. There's nothing against Larry's out there. But I've never personally been friends with anyone named Larry. So I personally feel comfortable. I'm not saying that couldn't happen. Obviously, because I just said that, it probably now won't.
You're the son of a bitch that says he doesn't like people named... Well, guess what my name is?
I, am.
He's going to have you deported.
Here you go. I actually... I do have a friend named Larry, but I don't think he would... even begin to think that you were vaguely referring to him, as he's a punk rock bass player.
Okay. Well, I like bass players, and if you're a punk rock bass player,
I don't know.
I like people who are in
there's
bands.
A lot of bass generally, players that are fucking dicks, man. Fucking bass players. Fuck them. Goddamn fucking bass players.
I'm just wrong about everything, aren't I?
No, actually, some bass players are cool. I play bass, so...
You know. I saw some people
and
I know
I'm cool.
Playing jazz.
Hey.
It was
oh,
pretty
God,
nice.
I just did the Fonz.
No, you didn't. I mean, it could be construed that way, but you really didn't.
No, it was. I mean...
All right.
The thumbs up, and which you couldn't hear. You couldn't see, listener. You couldn't hear my thumbs up, no. Listener. But I was saying, hey. You know, that's pretty much... Now I'm going to go hit the side of the jukebox, and a song is going to play.
You know what? A local sports columnist just today... Ooh,
should
Alan,
I start it? Should I start it?
Just today, a local sports columnist was comparing UK coach John Calipari to the Fonz. Right, he's got that dynamism, that mesmerizing quality. He's the man. Like, he walks into a room and snaps his fingers, and he gets all of the prima donna recruits to come. Everybody wants to play for this guy. I mean, it is the most impressive recruiting prowess I think I've ever seen in terms of college basketball. Of course, it happens as a time where I am just becoming completely...
And
disillusioned and alienated from the game, but
I do believe that you swore
that I'm not going to watch any games.
Not going to watch,
here's
the problem, though, is that you're already breaking this by paying attention to the.
No, that's now. I never said that I wasn't going to pay any attention.
Oh no, no.
I said I wasn't
going to
watch the games.
If you're going to ignore college basketball for 1 year, you have to ignore college basketball.
Yeah.
For 1 year.
Well, but that's kind
and
of
that
impossible.
That includes. Yeah, no,
I'm not
it's
going
not.
To hear,
I have no problem doing it.
Well, that's because you're oblivious. You don't realize how your frequency is
no
turned
up. No one that I know
what I
really
said
gives a shit except for
is
you.
Is that I wasn't going to watch their games.
Oh, well,
but
see,
this is
but
here's the
but
thing: you're criticizing
what the
me,
core
and the
is
whole up. The whole point that I'm trying to make is a criticism of the game. I mean, I'm simply paying attention to this recruiting news as a means of supporting my already growing alienation from the game.
I still think that in the interest of your experiment, and you did
well,
call it a social
have
experiment.
We can't sports anymore. How's that? How's that, listeners?
But,
no more sports.
But, well, listener, please
like,
let
where
us
do
know.
We draw? It's but, like you.
But
you sound
there's baseball.
You sound like the big
there's
government.
Baseball,
you sound like the big
football.
government socialist that wants to regulate everything. You know, yesterday it was like God, I can't watch
I
the games.
Do
now
want...
I can't even read a freaking sports column.
Well,
I
can't
even look
read
at the sports page.
No, you
cannot
go,
look.
You go,
you
oh, this is about basketball.
You
I'm going to skip down.
Yeah, you
oh,
cannot,
here we go. Here's football. Here's
yeah,
baseball.
But just in knowing there's something about basketball, I mean, this stuff is so simple. It's like if you look at it, you've basically already read half the article. That's how short and simple they are. You know, like player X commits to Kentucky. That's the article. You know, the rest of it is just the columnist showing off and... Trying to
but
pretend like
there's a point
philosopher
there's a point
because
at which
say something
when
about
you don't
recruiting.
Read these articles,
yes,
you don't
well,
keep up
anyway.
With the game, you
the
don't keep up with the
season
team.
Is still 7 months away.
But
relax,
you're aware of this recruiting
for the sake,
that's going on,
right? For the sake of it's an ogroid, for God's sake.
I know, but I just I think that if you are really going to go a year without college basketball,
I don't know.
You need to do it more like, and this was forced upon me, of course, because of my extremely heavy college class load, and the fact that my college basketball team was eliminated for the entire time I was in college after throwing the game to Louisville, where it. Just leaves the radar, and it can be done. I mean, I managed to keep up with NFL sports with it the entire time I was in New Orleans. I wasn't like you are with UK, but I knew what was going on with the Saints. I knew where they stood. I knew where the other teams stood. You know, I was really aware of that stuff and just did not know a thing about college basketball. And I still don't. I don't know anything about NBA. I don't give a shit about it. NBA bores the living piss out of me. It's like, throw the ball, score. It's like that. It's like, who gives a fuck? It's 120 to 119. I don't care.
Yeah, it's actually not even that interesting. I wish the games would be 120 to, you know, it's more just sort of like watching high school or the Big Ten play with empty arenas and nonstop
and 8-foot goals.
Right, there you go.
It's right. Like, you know, high school championships on 8-foot goals.
Well, it's like what America does is it takes anything, you know, like. Basketball
and makes it better,
and ruins it.
We take everything and we make it better.
We take everything and then we ruin it. We've ruined food. We've ruined basketball.
Well, first we made it better, and then we ruined it. Actually, no, that's not true.
I don't think. Yeah, no.
Though, you know, here's the thing about food is that we are at gastronomically an unparalleled point in the history of food. You know, 20 years ago, there's absolutely no way that in a city the size of Louisville, there would be 10 or 12 Indian restaurants, 15 sushi restaurants, French, German. The amount of varieties of cuisines that you can partake in, and the variety of foods that you can go get from a supermarket. We go to this value market that's here near us, which has, for the size of the store, does have a pretty good selection. They irk me with things and little niggling things, but they really have a great selection of fruits and vegetables. They have a reasonable, you know, selection of international stuff, etc. You go to the value market that's out by Iroquois Park. It's a mind twister. You have an entire aisle of Chinese food, an entire aisle of Japanese food, an entire aisle of Polish food, German food, Yugoslavian food. You have sections for all these crazy fruits and stuff.
Right. You also have...
We had no access to that 20 years ago. None.
Grab and go and... eat while you put gas in your car, and unprecedented levels of diabetes and obesity.
Diabetes.
I do think I can't dispute the observation that you just made about an increase in the variety of cuisines, but that doesn't really address or counteract, neutralize what I think is on the whole a really miserable relationship that Americans have toward food. It's just another errand. It's another thing to check off the to-do list. I mean, people eat alone. They eat in a hurry. They're just worried about it being cheap and it being lots of it and all this other crap.
Being fast, having a lot of fat, salt, and sugar.
Is that what you said?
I just said that.
In your blog? You just brought the blog up, so I thought maybe you had said something.
Oh, no, I'm...
No, that's all right. But
I'm just...
The older I get, the more I appreciate, you know, and here's the thing. There's more to food than eating. And I think that, especially with the technology that we have and the potential for the quality of life that we have, that it's really too bad that food... doesn't figure more prominently in people's lives. I mean, there should be at least one time of day in the evening where everybody looks forward to having a nice, long meal with their family and friends. And it should involve more than just eating. It should be knowing where the food is coming from and being involved in the preparation of it and kind of, you know, bonding and sustaining those social bonds of family and community. And that is, I think... being lost. I mean, it's miserable when I see people just, you know, eating almost like they're sticking a Q-tip in their ear while they're driving and they're trying to perform some other task. I mean, there is something really, really, really wrong with you when there's no difference between eating and picking up the laundry or fixing your lawnmower.
See, I really hate your sort of saying that it's something wrong with you for that. You know, a lot of the people that are doing this, they are having to work 80 hours a week. We were talking about this outside. You know, a really, really large section of America has to work at least 60 hours a week just to get by. And a lot of people are working three jobs or so. And in the words of George W. Bush, God, only in America can somebody have three jobs. Fuck you, you little prick.
Isn't that great?
And those people are...
I don't have a big socialist government that tells you you can only have one job.
Let's say they just finished work. They go pick up their kid. They take their kid to soccer practice. They have to then go and get their other kid. So they stop at McDonald's. They get this food. They shove it in their mouth in between there and getting their other kid, taking them to the other thing they've got to do. Then they've got to get those kids home. And then they go to their second job. And when they get home from their second job, it's just... I don't think you realize how many people are in this utter grind. And actually, I just now remembered what my point was that you kept interrupting me and I couldn't get to, was that when the minimum wage was originally conceived, it was enough income for one person to support a family of four. You could not support a family of four with three minimum wage jobs. Most of the time, both parents are working two minimum wage jobs, right, if they're the kind of people that's the best they can do. And unfortunately, there's a good large chunk of the society that is not smart enough. It doesn't matter how motivated they may be. They will never be smart enough to do anything other than the lowest kind of job. And we've made the lowest kind of job a type of wage slavery, where these people have to work 7 days a week.
And a big and part most of that is the fast week, food industry.
Sure, or they're shoveling shit, you know, or they're digging fucking holes. And, you know, I had a big project and I needed labor in a hurry, and I needed people that all I had to do was get them in there, and then I paid a company. Well, it turns out they were paying these people maybe 25 cents more than the minimum wage. They were not getting paid well at all, and I was working them, you know. I was paying double the amount that they were getting paid. And I had two different guys working for me. They were nice. They were friendly. One of them was just kind of a fuck up. He was a drunk, you know. But, you know, he was a drunk.
You make a good point.
But other guy that was working for me, he really, you could not tell him more than one thing to do. You couldn't say, do this, then do that. You could only tell him, do this. And as simple as this may be, I wanted him to plant some plants on an angle so that they wouldn't look like they were planted in rows. You know, it was to make it so they were offset.
I don't think I could
do that. He was absolutely flummoxed. Yeah, you could. The way I showed him, you could do that. No problem.
Wow.
No problem.
Did you hear that, listeners?
It was
a compliment.
It was
about my capacity to perform manual labor.
This is not a compliment. It was hold the stick like this.
Relatively speaking.
Plant three plants, move it over 6 inches, plant three plants, and the stick is at an angle. He could not handle that. That was beyond his ability to do. And you could see it that he wanted to do it, and just he could not understand it. There are a lot of people like this.
Yes, but
and it's not fair that they should have to work brutal fucking labor.
I agree.
In two different jobs just so they can feed their wife and children, which probably they
maybe
shouldn't have children,
exactly.
But that's a whole different
children.
Thing.
They probably shouldn't have been born
and
themselves.
And there's we'll but, never be able to stop that shit. So
well, but the thing is that I see your
you
point.
You need people to
but
dig ditches.
But there is a you're assuming that the only people who have this approach to food are the people you just talked about. I mean, there are tons of white-collar people out there simply because they have the same specious value system that the Tea Partiers have.
That their mom and daddy gave to them.
What do they do? You know, they're not stupid. You know, they're lawyers, but they would rather sit in that office and, you know, walk across the street and just eat shit and eat in a hurry and sit there and stress out because it'll mean that they can make more money or get that promotion within the firm. They're so goddamn miserable they would rather do that than say, you know, I put in a long productive day, the work isn't going anywhere. Now I am going to enjoy the other phase of the day, which is where I'm going to spend time with my family and friends. I'm actually going to enjoy my food. Like there's something wrong with that. Like it's elitist or it's about luxury, and it's not. I mean, enjoying life is a basic somatic survival.
I mean, there is a problem with the daily sit down meal, like you were talking about. There is a problem with that, and I think. But I think that has more to do with the with children and the over scheduling of children, and plus, people don't cook anymore. They just don't cook.
Think about how fucked up that is.
Well, it may be, but you know we're not going to be able to change it.
They don't. Well, I don't know. I think that you're right. I mean, you kind of sound like me there, but I'm not going to excuse people. Be like, sure, just go ahead and be completely miserable.
That's the thing, though, is that I'm not excusing all people, but you are condemning all people.
I'm not condemning all people. I'm condemning the people who are being losers. Why do you need to sympathize with them?
I think you think that there's a small group that most of the people that this is the situation for, it's because they choose it to be that way.
And I say,
man, the vast majority of Americans don't have any fucking choice. They don't have a single fucking choice. They're lucky to be able to live the life they're living. They're lucky to be able to do it, and they're just barely able to do it. And the idea, see, this is what you as a single man working in academia are isolated from is the married couple with children that are just trying to live in a decent house and drive a car that won't break down and put some money in the bank so that when their job ends, they won't have to continue to work.
Who told them to have children?
Come on. Most people want to do that.
People don't ever think about, like, you know, am I going
to
get married?
Do
I
want to
get
to do that? That's just, that is a specious argument. The idea that people... most people would think about it. Oh, you know, I might just decide not to get married. I'll live a life all by myself, not have any children, and I'll live a shorter life because of it. Which is the end result. Because when you have a couple together, they look out for one another, or at least one of them looks out for the other.
Well, if they don't kill each other or get divorced after
which the vast majority of people
years.
Well no actually the vast majority well not the vast majority see now I'm getting into the Republican lies a slight majority of couples and do split up. There's no problem with that.
This is the same thing that we get into over and over again, which is you know, I
but
see
but you're somehow
the
saying
social
that,
influence
that staying
on these
single
people.
And living a life of sort of pseudo luxury in an academic setting so that you don't actually have to work like really hard to live.
There are lots of people out there that have lives that are similar to mine. Some of them are married and some of them aren't. I mean, I'm not like one of 50 people in Louisville who lives the way that I do.
But out of 1,000 average Americans, I would say you were like one of four.
One of 4,000?
One of four out of 1,000. There might be three other people that live a similar lifestyle of yours out of 1,000.
I don't know.
And I think that's a large number. You as a dedicated bachelor who spends most of his time in bars and restaurants, when he's not doing an academic job, you're in a tiny minority.
Right, but that's what I said. That was just what I'm saying. That beyond people who work in academia, it isn't that rare of the type of person, the demographic of which I fit into, that does not have a similar lifestyle. You make it sound like I am this very fringe.
I think that's a 40-year-old professional, you are definitely an exception.
Well,
I'm an exception. I'm 45 years old. I've never been married. I don't have any children. Self-employed. I'm in a minority, but your minority is much smaller.
Those are observations.
And all of these people have apparently made the choice to get married and have children. I don't think it's forced upon them. There's a biological drive to reproduce, you know, and you have to, it takes a little bit of effort, not a whole lot, but it takes a little bit of effort to hold that at bay. There is apparently some kind of a drive for people to hook up in semi-monogamous ways for extended periods of time. It's a relatively new phenomenon in human history, the exclusive monogamy. But it's still a drive. So
I know
most people are going to do that.
I know a lot of people in all kinds of different jobs and different demographics who do not want to have kids and live their lives accordingly. And that I'm not saying that there is anything wrong with having children. I'm saying that
there is something wrong with having
children. There is some degree to which with adults that they are responsible, they are making some sets of choices, whether it's to, you know, drop out of college or they just want to get married and have a family because they think it's going to make them grown up and they don't give any thought whatsoever. I mean, this is a big part of education programs of teen pregnancy. And it's like, if you're going to discourage teen pregnancy, why aren't you all going to also discourage people from having children when they're 20 and 21? Like, there's a real difference there. A basic responsible person, I don't think, would start a family until they were somewhat prepared for and able to do that. And there are people out there that make choices that are, I think, just selfish and irresponsible.
Again, I come back to the fact that there are an awful lot of people that are living in a culture that
has socially conditioned them to do that.
I don't think it's social conditioning or anything. There's a huge group of people that fuck up and have kids. You know, people are gonna have sex. They're gonna fuck.
Well, if they're not ugly. You were saying that the ugly people get it on, man.
You're just...
Well, that's fine. It's just people like you that don't have sex. The lack of sex education, birth control being taboo in the 21st century.
Oh, God, we can't be teaching sex to the children.
Right. I mean, all of these things are not good.
It's Jesus.
You're right. But still, I do think that people who just don't pay any attention to what's going on and are oblivious to the actions that they're taking and the choices that they're making, whether they are, you know, conscious or reflective about doing them or not, part of the problem is them. I'm not just going to say, well, they don't have anything to do with it at all, and that just makes them seem like they're zombies or something.
They are. We're zombie America. We live in zombie America. Man, that'd be a good song, wouldn't it? We live in zombie America.
That should be on the premier album for Twisted Paradoxical Aryan Paradigm.
My favorite band. Now, I'm going to throw my one Ogroid of the week in, which is my... Wait, is that the one? Yeah. It is the... I'm on the wrong page.
That's the same one.
Yeah. Mitch McConnell's opposition to financial reform. That is my only Ogroid.
It ties closely to Abacus.
Yes, it does indeed. And our wonderful senator, the loathsome Mitch McConnell, he's just such an awful man. And it makes it embarrassing to live in this state that continues to reelect him. But he just is standing firm in opposition to anything that Obama does. And the idea that we don't need some kind of financial reform of the financial industry.
Complete collapse of the economy.
Absolute meltdown.
That everyone knows, regardless of what sort of legal decisions are made and legal consequences come out of this, everyone knows that it happened because of the incredibly poor and reckless decisions that the investment banks made.
Well, it's just everyone that thinks about these kind of things.
Everybody knows that.
And there's this goes to the
I like your labels for that one, by the way, Alan. It's impressive.
please go to modus operandi.
You really should check out the blog.
Pod. It's .blogspot.com.
The blog has really come. It was maybe a relatively slow week. We should talk about our blog.
It was a slow week.
We should talk about our blog, like they talk about NASDAQ. On activity was relatively minimal this week on the blog. However, investors
think
that there
will be posts, but down four.
An upturn with the Derby season and then the spring holiday and Memorial Day coming up not too far away. We expect to see more posts in the coming months.
And listener, I would just like to say that
blog
that
confidence is high.
We are still celebrating Derby season here in Louisville, but. I am not going to slur my speech during the course of this one.
God. But whether it's Derby season or not, we're always celebrating.
We're up.
Ogrefest! Ogrefest! It's time to hang out with the Ogres!
So, you know, I feel a break coming on.
Okay.
I feel a break coming on. So, it's time for us to fill our glasses again, and we'll be right back after this little thingy doohinky thingy.
You are listening to the Modus Operandi Podcast. Thanks for doing that.
So, one of your Ogroids was the stranded passenger situation in Europe and England because of the volcano in our air traffic system. And, you know, after 9/11, and we were talking about how businesses are run on the edge. Mm-hmm. That they're just,
yes.
And the airlines are one of the worst examples. They are able to just wring profit out of this business by pushing it to where just all it takes is one little kink in the machine, you know, and it can be something as small as fog in Denver that lasts for 6 hours. That can really fuck up the airline industry. It can make the entire thing not work properly, and airlines lose a fortune when that happens. Now, they're making a fortune while they're moving people around. But when you have a situation, basically the industry is set up to where everything has to be exactly on time, and this is much broader than just the airline industry. But you've got all these people waiting in airports to go somewhere, and there's no cushion. There's no buffer for them to actually, you know, if in the event that their plane can't leave, for them to leave by some other means. And, of course, the problem with this is that people have paid, say, $600 to get from England to, let's say, Greece, and probably not even that much, $300 or $400, Well, they don't have that $300 or $400, and they're not going to get it back. And you cannot get, you might be able to get there by rail, except that when you've got 500,000 people trying to get there by rail, all of a sudden, there aren't enough train cars. And that wasn't such a big problem, except that we as people have grown so used to going, you know, I think I'm going to spend a week in London because I can afford it this year just for the hell of it. I'm just going to go over there. Or, you know, I'm going to fly to Mexico for a cheap weekend. You know, when you go many thousands of miles from your house, it should not be a cheap weekend. It really shouldn't. I mean, it used to be, if you were going to go, say, to Europe, let's go back to, say, the 40s. If you were going to go to Europe, that was going to be something you were going to do once in a lifetime, and you were going to save for years to go do it, because you were going to have to book yourself onto a, you know, of course, you could go on a freighter, you know, it's cheap. Right. Apparently, you know, it's a, but most people wanted to go on a one of the bigger liners. Well, that's all changed. You know, of course, when the Titanic went down, that stranded a lot of passengers as
well. Now, that, you want to talk about being stranded. That's,
those guys were. And it was cold.
Yeah.
So, what they, now, what I heard most recently was that, that they were actually, the Brits were going to use military vessels to move people around. And I thought, boy, that's got to be a joy. You know, you're expecting to fly from London to Paris, you know, and you've got to do it in the hold of a fucking military
ship. Yeah, they're going to make them skydive to paratroop down. It's like, you stand up.
You have to climb one of those rope ladders to get
Just pull the cord. Pull the cord, damn it.
Sure to count to five or you'll die.
Here's the typical academic utopian, doesn't live in the real world, has no understanding or comprehension thereof, response on the Ogroid that is the stranded travelers. One thing that, that occurred to me is, how come nothing was really done to help these people? And I'm going to speak just completely theoretically and imaginatively, and the disclaimer that I'm doing that, right? Which is, okay, with the hotels in all of these places, well, obviously no one was coming in because no one was going out. No one was going out, no one was coming in, right? So why wasn't there some sort of agreement with airline industry, hotels, the government, and other outside parties to not force these people to sit? It's one thing to be like, there's a bad storm, you're going to have to stay overnight. You know, that sucks, but, you know, one night. Those fucking people had to stay there for a week. That's bullshit, man. It's not their fault that the volcano blew up and that they got stranded there. You know, there's no reason that conceivably, if the imagination and the interest and the motive were there, spend all of our money on war and throwing everybody in jail, instead of, you know, how many fucked up things have to happen before people realize that shit like this happens really all the time. It's a, you know, the levees break, there's an earthquake,
the thing you don't understand is...
Yeah, no one gives a fuck. It's like, fuck
it
you.
It is their fault that they're stranded because they're not rich. If you're rich, everything is good. You know, if you're rich, you can hire somebody to drive you where you are going.
That says it all, and you brought together a lot
they actually,
of things.
They actually, on NPR, I heard an interview with this person who had managed to get from, it was through a bunch of countries, but I think it was from, I want to say Austria down to Turkey. And they managed to get a cab, and it was like $2,000 to be driven down. That's great if you can just whip $2,000 out of your back pocket. Good for you. But who can? Almost no one. You know, even those people that are just hopping out of England to go down to Ibiza, you know, for $200 or something, Your phone is making funny noises.
I'm going to answer this. What's up, Cleaminth? Doban! I'm talking about how fucked up it is that they let all the stranded travelers just sit there in the airports for 5 days, and that they should have, they should have like put them up in hotels or something.
Well, of course, this is the wet dream of the right-wing green movement, in which nature facilitates free enterprise and the necessity for travelers to pay out-of-pocket expenses for the failure of these massive too-big-to-fail airlines.
So you are saying that the right wing is responsible for the eruption of the volcano in Iceland?
No, not at all. I'm just saying this is the one moment in which they would...
I'm saying that, so the least you could do is agree with me. Because I believe that it's the Republican Party that caused the it's because they wanted to bring down the airlines and remind people of how it was during 9/11, so that they would win votes.
Well, the same, man. I don't know if I can agree with that, but I would say that it's the one time they will embrace the environment because it actually, you know, pushed up, consumerism to the point where travelers had to spend their money and, like an insurance claim. Ooh. It's an act of God, so they don't have to even pay out of pocket. The airlines don't have to pay for the room and board like they would if it was a failure on their end.
Yes, that's a good point, Jeff.
Oh, and you should introduce yourself, Jeff, so that they...
this is Dr. Perry from the world of Eastern Carolina.
Eastern Carolina.
Stronghold of America.
Yep.
Well, it's an interesting discussion.
It is.
Hey, I called about the beach. I'm going to let you two go.
Okay.
destroy one another. Sounds good. It's a good argument. I'm not sure we can blame any volcanic activity on the Republicans. That's giving them far too much power.
They have power.
Meditative powers. I don't think they can think that far ahead as a group to actually construct such a problem.
Actually, Dick Cheney's just been pumping bullshit into the earth for the last.
Right. This is what he means by operating on the dark side, exactly on the other side of the core. when you get off here, give me a call over me.
Okay, Doban.
Love the show, and I hope one day you'll call me and I can be the guest, and I can start from the beginning.
Sure, all right. We'll do.
We'll have a wonderful discussion.
Yes, okay. We'll do that. Okay. All right.
All right. Peace, man.
Well, that was...
Hang that up.
That was a great moment. But anyway, I guess
caller.
If we're...
And except for all the transmission interference noise, that was pretty cool.
Do we need to be done now at this point, basically?
I guess we,
we've basically reminded everybody that everything sucks, or at least I have.
Well,
and then you've explained why my views are fucked up, but you know that in the end I'm right, so. Just another week of the podcast.
I almost always concede that you are partially right, but that you are making a gross generalization. Whereas I am always right. So I guess that means that
nothing good is ever going to happen again.
Okay, bye.
Right. You have been listening to the Modus Operandi Podcast. Featuring Alan Miller and Dr. David Ogilvie. Produced at the IFPR Studios in Louisville, Kentucky. You can reach us at mopod@psychicreform.com. Or by visiting our webpage at psychicreform.com/mopod. The program has been produced and edited by Alan Miller. Music by the Institute for Psychic Reform. Intro music is a Hydropod remix. We are currently self-supported, so please send us money, and your name could be right here. Thanks for listening, and please come again.